Welcome to the National Hour on the Real Kipper and Bourne Show. We are live on Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver, Sportsnet 960 in Calgary. Sammy forgot to change over the jersey. We're across all Sportsnet platforms, and this hour of Real Kipper and Bourne brought to you by Bet365. Nick Kiprios, Justin Bourne, and a very forgetful but very excited Sammy McKee, because his Leafs are up 2-0.
Yeah.
And there's no other team, as far as he's concerned, in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
It's tough to put an Oilers jersey up when the thing is half the size of an adult jersey. But
I was also got a DM from a guy named Garrick on Twitter.
Yeah.
That said, Sam, that Pope fact is just way wrong.
Is that right?
Pope Paul the VI was head of the Catholic Church from June 21st, 1963, until his death on the 6th of August, 1978. There was no Pope election in 1967. Sorry, bud.
Just.
You missed our Pope talk in the first hour.
The Pope? I was misled.
Please.
That's unholy.
I cannot cope with the Pope right now.
Cope with the Pope. Sorry, so I was wrong with the Pope.
Okay.
American Pope. Next on American Pope.
Can we go from Pope talk to Jets talk?
Well, Rantanen's maybe going to be the next Pope after his playoff performance so far.
Jeez.
Okay.
He shoots a lot.
He's got to cool off here.
8 goals in 8 games, 15 points, 1.88 points per game, 10 of them at even strength, a tip, a lucky redirection, a great one-handed rebound bat, all in the second period. Natural hat trick.
He is...
Look at that play.
So what's the stat that he's been involved in the last 14 goals that they've scored?
I thought it was 12.
Is it 12?
I thought 12 or 14, one or the other. Either way, it's ridiculous.
The first NHL player with a hat trick in back-to-back playoff games since...
Yari Curry,
a fellow Finn. Also playing well, Luostarinen, Lundell, more Finns. Finns are good at hockey.
The one thing I mentioned on yesterday's show is I think it was going to be difficult for the Jets to kind of come off that double overtime win and then just focus and put together a solid 60 minutes. We saw a tremendous push. Ottinger stood the challenge last night, yeah. But is that what you got out of game one with Winnipeg?
You know, they did carry, they outshot them 31-24. You know, I thought, yeah, this is going to be a close series of close games, and you're going to have to withstand those momentum swings. And when the other team has theirs, you just can't give up three. You know, you know, blame Hellebuck for any of those ones. Kind of tough. Maybe you want him to hang on to the first one.
That puck was sitting right in the blue paint.
Yeah.
With a chance to tie it in the last minute.
Yeah.
Like, oh, my God. I mean, listen, they got one of the greatest finishes in the history of the league, tipping it in with a second left. Maybe you're not going to get that balance, but when you see that puck sitting there, you're like, oh, my God, what could have been?
Yeah.
We're going to welcome Devin Dubnyk to the program as we let him settle in. I think, I don't know, do we have him yet, or are we waiting on Devin?
Usually they tell us when we have
okay,
him.
Okay, all right.
Do some goalie talk.
In the meantime, can't help but think about Colorado fans that constantly got to watch Rantanen from here on in. And we did hear from president and general manager Joe Sakic.
I've made a huge mistake.
In Colorado. And yeah, it's hard to remember, I think, years down the road that they were really close to winning this series. Like, where's that fine line? And was it just about the guy that you traded away that kept you from potentially winning the Stanley Cup this year?
Yeah, I mean, yes. That's the reason.
That's as simple as that.
It is. The answer is yes.
I guess so.
I'm curious what the knock-on effects of this decision are. Are the Avs, how are they going to spend their money this offseason? Do they now feel like they can go get Mitch Marner? Are they going to do something different with the money?
Yeah.
Or because otherwise, Kip,
yeah,
they're just a worse team than they were on a decision they held in their hands and didn't follow through on.
And traded their best prospect and a first-round pick
for
Brock Nelson, who didn't score a goal in the playoffs, did he?
No, he didn't.
No.
The one thing that Joe made pretty clear was he just wasn't ready to commit the money to Rantanen, and the feeling was that it was too much up front between, I guess, him, McKinnon, and I don't know if he put
McCarr in there,
but too top heavy. I'm not sure if he used that phrase or not, but there was a sense of too much, right? And leaving him too thin or not enough depth.
But the cap is going to the moon.
Well, that's what I think everybody's been saying here. And if you're not going to pay Rantanen, who are you going to pay? Because I got news for him. That Nakash,
mm-hmm.
What do you think he's going to ask for?
I don't know, 10? 11?
11?
I don't know.
You're right. No, you're right. And if I was him, I'd ask for that too.
Yeah.
But, okay, so what do you think you're saving by moving Rantanen?
It's not good, Kip. This is not good. And I do think this has the potential to be really bad. Really bad. How mad is their superstar? How mad is the fan base? How much, if they lose again next year, do people say, all right, well, we got to do something different?
All right. Let's welcome him in. Devan Dubnyk, former NHL goalie, Coyotes. You know, the first time I met Devan was, I think, the third goalie with the Montreal Canadiens, and we were in the same lineup for hot dogs at the Bell Center.
Is that right?
Yes.
You're giving me too much credit there. I think I was the fifth goalie. I think I'd sent my gear back home already. I was just
and then
formality.
Yes, and then from that moment that we met, then you became a star in the league, a number one legit goalie. I think me and the hot dogs deserve a little credit for that.
Yeah, I had to do some extra work when I got home to work those hot dogs.
Yeah,
because I had a few in the center there.
Thanks for joining us. Just a lot of talk, not only on our show but throughout the league on Mikko Rantanen and what he's been able to do single handedly for the Dallas Stars and how this is playing out for Colorado. But what are your initial thoughts when you've been watching him like the rest of the hockey world?
I caught a little bit of what you guys were saying before, and it's truly baffling. You know, the more you go over it, you try to make sense of it. You try to, like, you were just doing the numbers there, and it just, for a team that has made so many good moves and seems to consistently make good moves, there's just nothing about this that makes sense. The trade in general, you have a top five player in the league. I'm sorry, he's a top five player just about every season. Mm-hmm. He's big, he's strong, he skates, he stick handles, he shoots. I mean, what are you? You can't replace what Mikko Rantanen is, and it's not just that. It's combined with the timing of it. Like, it wasn't a rush at the deadline. We tried to sign him. Oh my gosh, we can't. We have to get something for him on a team that is considered a cup contender. So you know sometimes you even just have to sit on that, eat it, and take your chance that you might still win a Stanley Cup with him, potentially lose him, but still have the time to try to sign him. If you go win a guy that seemingly wanted to be there, has continued to say he wants to be there, he's loved in the room, but then they do it, and it was like a week or two before they come out with the cap projections. So they did it before this, and then it was, I don't know if it was exactly a week, but it seemed like a short period after they come out with these cap projections that are going through the roof, and all of a sudden it's like 12.5, that's like nothing.
Right.
So it just, there's so much of it that doesn't make sense to move on from a player who is beloved in the room, in the city, and really an irreplaceable player. And unfortunately for Colorado and their fans, he just shoved it down their throats.
Oh, my gosh.
And then rubbed some salt in the wound last game. Like, when you read these numbers, are you serious? 14 points in four games, two back-to-back natural hat tricks. Like, this isn't real.
Yeah, baffling.
Devan, you've competed against him. You played against him. Those Minnesota Wild years, seeing him constantly. What is it about him? What's it like facing a guy like that?
Well, he's Moose, right? The guy is massive. He's 6'5", I don't know, 235, whatever he is like solid muscle. The guy's in incredible shape. And he's not, it's funny because when you watch, he's not like flashy. He doesn't look super fast. You got McKinnon out there is going 100 miles an hour. It looks amazing. But when you really watch him, like, he's got incredible hands. He is fast. He's huge, so he's going to go to the hard areas. He kind of just does everything. And then, I don't know if quietly is the right word, but his points totals and everything. Like, he's got an incredible one-timer knack for the net. I mean, again, it's just the more you talk about it, this is essentially an irreplaceable player who happens to be 6'5", 240, by the way. Like, have fun moving that guy in front of the net. And so, I had to deal with him. I could have a peek over his shoulder sometimes if I was lucky, but he was a menace around the net.
So his job this series is to make life hard on Connor Hellebuyck. Hellebuyck had an unbelievably strange year in that he had one of the best goaltending performances we've seen in regular season in a long time and a really tough first round. So what did you, a fellow goaltender, make of what's happened with him in the playoffs?
Yeah, you know what? It's a tough one, and it continues to kind of be like it's you can't call it a fluke anymore when it just is continued to happen. And I don't know. I mean, I can see it. I don't know if it's pre-scout, because it's different than playing in Winnipeg in the middle of February. You're not going to get that same focus on that specific game. Going into a playoff series, there's a ton of pre-scouting involved. All the advanced analytics and whatnot now, and a lot of it, with Helly, it's a lot of high east to west puck movement. And then you're seeing these point shots go through, and combined with that, so Connor Hellebuyck is one of the best goalies there is at reading the game. That's what he's great at. He's right there. He's on top of it. He plays deep in his net, but it feels like he's always right there because his reads are that good. In order to do that, in order to be able to do that, you have to fully trust what's going on in front of you. And throughout the year, obviously, Winnipeg played extremely well in front of him, very structured. That gives him the confidence to make these reads that he's so good at, so he can play deeper because he has to, because he's not the best skater in the world, and then be comfortable with knowing exactly what's going on in front of him, so he makes these reads and he's there all the time. Well, as soon as, for whatever reason, Winnipeg doesn't seem to be, whether it's being late in shot lanes, not boxing out, being late trying to box out and cutting across, there seems to be a lot of cross screens and tips, and now he's playing deep in his net, so that's getting exposed. As soon as he starts to feel like, when he's relying on those game reads as much as he does, as soon as he starts to feel like he doesn't trust what's going on in front of him, then those reads start to become anticipation, start to become borderline guessing on plays, right, rather than sitting on guys, letting that play happen, and then moving into it with the extra speed being your read. The facts of goal is kind of a perfect example. So it's not a great shot, let's be honest. Like, it's not Ovi coming down and ripping it under the bar. Like, it was a shot high glove on a straight line. I mean, yes, those are going to go in sometimes, but not at that time in the playoffs. But if you watch the play, he's got a St. Louis player driving the back post. And maybe when he's on and he's feeling it, he's going to either know that guy's taken by his D-man, or he's going to feel comfortable that he can get there if that play happens. He can sit on the shot, wait for it, knowing that if that play happens, okay, now I'll go. But what you can see is he obviously doesn't trust. He feels it off of his back shoulder. He doesn't trust that puck's not going there, or he feels like he can't get there if it does. Now he starts to sink back a little bit. You see his skates just start to drift. His shoulders then flatten out, which is that kind of guessing game a little bit, where he's getting ready to go before the play happens. Those shoulders flatten out. It opens up the glove side, and a shot goes in that really wasn't a great shot. And that's kind of what you started to see with Hellebuyck and why pucks are getting past him. So if he needs to get that confidence and trust back on what's happening in front of him, so that he gets his reads back and those goals don't continue to go in.
So team structure is, not to say the whole thing here between what's happened to him from the MVP regular season to the playoffs, but can you talk about a little bit about that transition as for a goaltender and the pressures, or like, to your point, as soon as they straighten out what's going on in front of them, you're going to see the old Connor Hellebuyck back.
Yeah, I think so, but it's a fine line, because it's like it takes a little bit to get to the point of not trusting. You know, like crazy plays can happen, poor defense can happen in front of them. It's not like all of a sudden the trust is going to go out the window, but it chips away at it, and after, you know, back-to-back games in St. Louis that were blowouts, you know, that then starts to creep in. It's the same thing. It's not this magic potion, irreversible boom you have to build back that trust and that feeling, and it works both ways. He has to build back that comfortable feeling with the guys in front of him. Of course, they trust him, and they know he's one of the best goalies in the world, and they're going to see it. But he's got to find a way to get back to showing them that. They've got to find a way to get back to him trusting. This is a great save, by the way. Yeah. What's going on in front of him, and then you slowly start to build that back up. But it's really, you know, a goaltender is as good as the group in front of him, and then his job is to make that group in front of him comfortable with what's going on behind them. They have to all work together, and it is, you know, overtime was a great step in game seven there. I thought he played well, and, you know, last night, was that last night? It was last night. I watched so much hockey.
We're right there with you, Val.
Yeah. He was okay, but it's got to, like, there's got to be a game in here somewhere, right, where he's just that guy that's a, whether it's a one goal or a shutout, and it's like, wow, that was a game, and then it'll come back, hopefully for them. But, you know, he's not far off. He's still the same goalie.
So, Devin, we'll keep it in Canada. I've got some questions about the goaltending in Edmonton. They start the playoffs with Stu Skinner. They move on to Calvin Pickard. I don't know what your thoughts are on the difference in quality of those two guys or their ability to win with Pickard and Skinner as a tandem. What are your thoughts on what's going on in the Oilers' crease?
It's changed a lot. I've been covering the Edmonton games a little bit, and you know, pre-playoffs, I was saying, like, it's got to take a lot for them to make a change in net. And Pickard had a great season. He did his job. He played well. He played more than he ever had. Nothing knocking against Pickard, but I just said, if Edmonton's going to go all the way, they need Stuart Skinner. It's just, I didn't, that's how I felt. I felt like there was something drastic was going to have to happen. It wasn't like a who's going to start here. And then all of a sudden after game two, like, it just looked so dire for Edmonton. You know, it wasn't just Skinner. It was just that every goal that went in, like, you know, the whole fan base, everything was just ready to jump all over him. And the team just had no jump in front of him. And it was just something needed to change. And so I got asked after game two, and I was like, yeah. You got to put Pickard in there because this is a guy who's battled. Structured. He's like plays a little street hockey.
Yeah.
But the guys play comfortable in front of him. They battle for him. They know he's going to battle for them, and they kind of just needed like a exciting save or something. Like I don't know. It was just. There was no Skinner just hadn't come up with a big save. The way he plays is very structured as well. So there's just, I don't know, they needed some sort of boost. And Pickard comes in here and he does that because, you know what, some saves that maybe normally wouldn't be that exciting can be a little exciting with Pickard. And now that he's gone on, he's done everything that's asked of him and more. And the way the Oilers are playing right now, there's really not that much that's being asked out of him other than to make these saves, make the saves that he should. And then he just seems to come up with the right one at the right time right now. And, you know, you can look down the road and say, is that good enough to get them all the way? I would have questioned that at the start, but with how well Edmonton is playing right now and how aggressive they are being going the other way. And like, I think they're playing extremely well offensively and defensively, turning the pucks over, transitioning the other way. If they can keep that up and keep it to the point where, hey, we just need you to make two or three tough saves tonight and stop the ones that you should, and we'll spend most of the game in the other end, who knows? We could see it.
Devin, you know that market pretty well in Edmonton, starting out, 5 years there, and the demand in that town. Is there any way that you could feel maybe what Pickard's feeling right now, or anybody in general who didn't necessarily envision being a number one guy, in a final eight in the Stanley Cup playoffs?
Yeah, you know what, he's had a great mindset when he got thrown in there, and the quotes that he had when he was talked to is just kind of like he said, what's there to be nervous about? I mean, he's been grinding in this league to try to stay in the league. I don't remember the exact amount of games that they said, but it was like, I don't know, 20 some games over like 5 years, or I don't know if it was that low, but it was something crazy like that. And he's like, you know, this is an incredible opportunity. What's there to be nervous about? This is just, it's a chance for him. And if it doesn't go well, then what? I mean, it was like nobody was really expecting it to be this savior anyway. So I think his mindset was perfect for that. And he's kind of, he's 5-0, so he's done an incredible job. But he's kind of taken that pressure off of the goaltending side, because it was honestly not even just into the playoffs, but all the way leading up, just this relentless talk about the goalies over and over and over again. And as the conversation's gone on now, the talk, it's like, yeah, he did a good job. It's almost like better. Like, you don't even want to say, like, Pickard stood on his head. It was just like, it's just not part of the conversation anymore. Nobody's talking about the goalies. It's great. Like, that's what they needed. And he's done that, where it's just kind of like, and I think he's given himself a leash now too. You know, I think that for a while it was like, yeah, if he really slips up in a game, then that's when you go back to Skinner. Cause I constantly said, like, I do think they would need Skinner to go all the way. I might be eating my words on that one, but I think he's earned himself a leash here, that if he does have a game that isn't great and he doesn't look good, I think he's earned the opportunity to stay in there and continue to battle.
For the NHL hour, we do a Leafs hour. And so I can tell you, Sam Bennett's little elbow to the head of Anthony Stolarz came up. As a goaltender watching that, what did you think? Is that on purpose? Goal guys trying to do that to you guys?
So, all right, here's the thing. Before I'm gonna piss off everybody in Toronto. I don't think he's trying to hit him. But he is trying to make contact. All right. So, but that's what these guys do, right? Like the Corey Perrys, the Sam Bennetts. This is why they're great playoff players. They're trying to agitate when they go through the crease. They're trying to get a little bump. I don't think he's trying to hurt him in the head. Like, it didn't look like a really hard contact. Mm-hmm. He didn't like swing his arm and hammer him, and it's unfortunate that he got hurt. But yes, he's trying to make contact, but that's his job. That's why these guys are, that's why you hate to play against him in the playoffs. And you know, he'll do that, and he'll bump you, and he'll piss you off, and then he'll go put the puck in the net. This is why these guys are great. I think it's, you know, a combination. He's trying to make contact with him, but at the same time, it was a really weird play where Stolarz ended up. Most of the time, guys push their post and go to the RVH there. On that play, he ended up biting a little bit on the shot to begin with, so he actually was down early, and then the puck goes down to Bennett, and he's kind of stuck at the top of his crease at the angle where he then goes paddle down because Bennett's right there to tuck it, and so he's kind of in a spot that the goalie wouldn't normally be. He'd actually normally be back, you know, a foot and a half, and Bennett is, you know, he takes the puck, he takes it to the net. That's the other side of it, is he's got the puck on a stick with a chance to score. Like, are we giving him that much credit that not only is he going to try to put the puck in the net, but at the exact same time, he's like, oh, I'm going to elbow him in the head. Like, I think that he initially was trying to score. Puck went off his stick. Hey, I'm around the goalie. I'm going to give him a little shove.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it was a serious injury, and that's too bad for anybody. But that's kind of what I took out of it.
With all this talk of crease crashing, we watched Bobrovsky, I thought, try to sell a few calls here. As long as they're coming in that area, are we going to see more of this? Is there a bit of an art for a goaltender to sell something without looking like he's selling something? Like, I know you would never do anything like that.
I got one email one time, but
from the league.
From the league, yeah, yeah. I completely disagreed with you. We had a nice back and forth conversation, but. There's an art to selling it. I don't think guys are very good at it. I know just from being in there, a lot of times the contact does feel like more than it ends up being, like when you rewatch it. But the thing is you're down and you're in a vulnerable position all the time, right? You're down on your knees with your head forward looking around. So, and these guys are moving quick out there. So a lot of times it's like when you get hit in the net, it feels like more than it is. But, you know, you got to be careful with the head back and the flailing the arms. And that's up to the league to make sure they're on top of that. And, you know, they create the list for the referees of guys that to watch out for with the diving and whatnot. But there's definitely an art, you know, if you can get bumped, lose balance. My favorite thing was to take the net off. being as big as I was. Like, if I was anywhere around the post and they were buzzing around the zone, if I got a little push, it was just like I could just get the crossbar nicely tucked underneath my shoulders and just be like, whoa.
I want to know. I
love that.
If we've got penalties over the glass for 2 minutes, I want a penalty for any goalie that knocks the net
but
off.
But I also want my goalie doing that. So
yeah, exactly. I mean, that would almost have to be a review call because you can't imagine the refs like staring at the goalie to try to – although sometimes this playoffs, it seems like they're looking at everything but the game.
How big are you? 6'7"? 6'6"?
6'6".
6'6". Like, you could breathe on one of those nets and knock it off. That's how big you are.
You just need the tiny little lift. That's why I was like,
just off the moorings and see you later.
I was on my knees, so just – you get 1 inch lift on that thing, and then the rubber pipe gets a little wobbly, and it doesn't take much.
Oh gosh, giving away all the secrets. The
I goalie, don't need them anymore.
You're handing in your goalie union card right now.
Yeah.
Hey Devin, great stuff, man. Thanks for joining us. We'll do this again, okay?
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
Devin Dubnyk,
thanks, man. Appreciate
former
it.
National Hockey League goaltender, doing a great job covering the NHL too as well.
Aiden Hill did that last night. No, it wasn't last night.
Yes.
Was it?
I know.
The night before? Yeah.
There was a national referendum when Matt Murray did it a couple times.
I'm telling you.
There was a national referendum.
He did it a hundred times on purpose.
Yeah, but that happens every night in the league, and it's like, Toronto guy did it, national referendum.
I can't remember when they brought in the rule for shooting the puck over the glass.
Yeah, yeah.
People were appalled. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And then it became just a normal part of it.
Yeah.
It's normalized.
Yep.
Why can't we normalize that if the net comes off and you have no other person to blame but yourself, you're getting a 2-minute penalty?
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Totally, totally agree. Hey,
just like, black and white.
Even if it's an accident,
black
like,
and
well,
white.
Hey, buddy, don't. If no one else touched you, you knocked it off.
You've practiced in this thing since you're 7.
Yeah.
You know, it hasn't moved.
It's the same size.
It's the same size. It hasn't moved. You know the distance between two posts. You know where it is. You knock it off. You're getting a penalty.
Mm-hmm.
Totally good with it. Honestly.
Yeah.
I have no problem with that.
By the way, I don't remember people shooting the puck over the glass to get a rest before they changed the rule. But anyway.
I did.
I remember a few people.
I mean, it happened, but not like with any regularity.
And now it's the only way you can get a power play in overtime.
I know.
As long as we're going on this pet peeve thing.
We should go.
Okay, one more.
Yeah,
okay, one more. Okay. Why is it more important in your own zone and it's not in the neutral zone or in the offensive zone? If we're going to keep, if we're asking
intention
you to keep the puck, you're a skilled player. You shoot it over the glass. You're a moron. Okay.
They're trying to catch guys who do it on purpose, which no one does anymore
just
in any zone.
Take away guessing who does it on purpose or not. And just say, you shoot it over the glass into the crowd. You kill the play. We don't like that. You're a pro.
Everywhere.
How do you shoot it? How do you shoot it in the neutral zone or in the offensive zone over the glass? Penalty.
Your first
all the way around penalty.
First rule was good. Second one, I don't think that's passing the game.
All right, I tried.
Okay. It's game time. Presented by Bet365. Visit the app for latest odds and find out why it's ever ordinary at Bet365. It's 15 plus Ontario only. Please play responsibly. So two great games on the ice tonight. We're going to talk about the first one tonight with Aaron Ward coming up after the break. Carolina in Washington looking for a 2-0 series lead on the road. Huge faves again. Minus 170 tonight, the Carolina Hurricanes. Washington Capitals plus 145, second best team in the league all year. You have to think that if they're going to get one in this, like this is a big one for them. So I don't hate the Washington Capitals tonight at plus 145.
I like that bet too. Plus money on them for sure.
Oilers in Vegas looking to take a big 2-0 lead on the road against the Golden Knights. They are underdogs as well tonight. Plus 110. I guess you'd imagine they'd be underdogs tonight. Vegas looking for a big bounce back. Minus 130. But the thing I really want to talk about is tomorrow night. The Leafs again, Friday night. This to me is crazy. The Florida Panthers tomorrow night are minus 240 favorites on home ice in their game three. The Toronto Maple Leafs are plus 195 on as a road, huge road underdog. I understand that the Panthers will likely win that game.
Florida push coming.
But that, I mean, that is a disrespectful number to the Toronto Maple Leafs. It is.
If I would never bet on the Leafs in that
no,
spot.
No, never.
But it's a good number if you would.
So do your, what do you call those edge?
Happiness hedge?
Happiness hedge.
No.
I want you to put $1,000.
Whoa!
Would you pay $1,000 right now for the Leafs to go up 3-0?
No. Because it's okay. I don't need to pay that yet. We'll see what happens after.
Thinks they're okay. He thinks they're going to win the series. We caught him. He thinks they're going to win.
Yes, he does now think they're going to win.
Oh, no.
Hey, they're 0-5.
This is going to hurt.
They're 0-5 in series where they go down 2-0, boys.
I told you,
grade heartbreak.
He's got the training wheels off.
Anyways.
Put him back on.
I just thought that's a crazy number. So I'm going to try to, you know, text Chief and text him the picture of that line and see, this is what they think of you, buddy.
Yeah. Chief be like, we just keep
he's like, Chief be like, who is this? I don't care. Anyways, that was Game Time presented by Bet365. Visit the app for latest odds and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus. Ontario only. Please play responsibly.
Okay. Let's take a break here. And when we return, Aaron Ward, Stanley Cup champion with the Carolina Hurricanes, who, by the way, had Rantanen, didn't keep him. No problem at all. No problem at all for Carolina. They keep rolling. Aaron Ward next to discuss when we return to Real Kipper and Bourne.
Hey, it's Ailish Forafar.
And I'm Justin Cuthbert.
Join us as we discuss the most important sports stories of the day and tee up the biggest games of the night.
It's The Fan pregame, 6 p.m. weekdays on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Real Kipper and Bourne Show. This hour of Real Kipper and Bourne brought to you by Bet365. All right, let's get him going. He's been on the show before. Love having him on. Aaron Ward, Stanley Cup champion, Carolina Hurricanes, the team that once had Rantanen, but unlike Colorado, doesn't really miss him right now.
It's nuts.
Hey.
You know, everybody left him for dead. Rantanen's gone. Give up your hopes and... They get Stankoven who walks in and completely fits in this mold. I mean, you got now guys under 5'7" and Blake and Jarvis, and now Stankoven who seem to play like they're 6'2". And it's amazing that I think everybody overestimated Jersey as a team. And I think now Fitzgerald coming out and talking about how disappointing it is for them to be where they are out of the playoffs. You're going to have to refit and retool. It's not going to be the same team. But I think you got to give credit to Carolina that they just stomped them. They just absolutely stomped them, and they handled them well. And some things, in light of the playoffs starting for them, came to the rose to the top, and they are highly effective right now.
It's funny. Everyone kind of looks at Stankoven and goes, such a Carolina Hurricanes player. He's whatever. But you look at the Canes. I mean, Martinook, Staal, Jankowski, Carrier, like Slavin Burns, like big on the back, and they've got their share of big guys too, Wardo.
So... yes, but they're all capable, no matter the size, to play the style that Roddy imposes on his team. And when I mean impose, they play that style. It's the most annoying style to play against. It's the identity of this team. And come playoff time, it runs you down. Absolutely takes you to the shed. And after a while, decor-wise, and what you saw, what happened with Washington the other night, actually, I came with some stats for you. My boss, who's actually a Toronto Maple Leaf fan, Curtis Harvey at SMT, former U of T hockey player, pass these along to give you an indication of just how bad game one was for Washington and why I think Carolina's going to win in five.
Ooh.
So,
whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Let them know.
Carolina led the National Hockey League over the course of the year in regular season, average time in the offensive zone at 46.1%. Okay. Their best game all year was against Toronto recently in April at 52.7%. In the game against Washington, 53.7%.
Wow.
Conversely, here's Washington for you, a team who's built on offense. Always not going and doing a ton if he's not getting himself planted in the offensive zone. Washington, lowest regular season game offensive zone time was 30.6% against your Carolina Hurricanes in December. Last game, 27.9%. So what that tells you is Wash is just aching to get out of their own end. So Carolina, the style they play, what they saw against Montreal tried to play a Washington-style game in the first part of the series and realized that you're not going to transition through against Washington. They're going to poke the puck off your stick. If you start to create chaos, you start to get Chychrun not thinking about going forward and has to stay in his zone, you're going to have better results. So now Carolina and the style they play, we talked about that lob it out, right? The puck's never in the offensive zone for Washington very often. Because Burns, all these guys are just put in the offensive zone. And as a defenseman, if I'm looking up and I'm having to try and locate this pop fly, I start to retreat. I'm not winning all those pucks. And they're so adept, usually one or two in the National Hockey League, in ozone battles won. the way the playoff series is going for Carolina, it's starting to play out, right? And the fear, if you're Carolina, and I've said it for 5-6 years now, I hate the goaltending here. It sucked for forever. Like, you can't, it's lipstick on a pig every year. You got a really good team. You got a ton of skill. You got really young guys, but you keep looking behind you. I was not shocked when Freddie pulled himself in New Jersey, because that's kind of, it's not a rip, but it's kind of his MO. But if he's sustainable in this series against the Logan Thompson, who I think, if you see how Carolina played that game, halfway through the game, Wash already had 24 block shots. That was not part of their design to play the Carolina Hurricanes. They're playing in their own end the whole time. So this could be an interesting and quick series.
So, Wardo, basically what you're telling me, this is where the analytics department really kicks in for Carolina. And they're like, we don't need a star goalie. We don't need to pay a guy $8 million. We just need Freddie to...
Don't put words in my mouth. They need a star goalie. Honestly, the thing I would love to change about this organization is, please God, go find someone.
Not now. It's too late now.
You can't do anything about it now. Right. So they're so reliant on the decor being like concrete. Pair one to pair three, they play the same style. They're going to block the puck. But it's the soccer mantra. If the ball's not in your end of the half and it's all the way down there, likelihood you're going to get scored on is very unlikely. And that's how Carolina plays a hockey game. If you get in the offensive zone, or you're always contesting the exit in the offensive zone or contesting in the neutral zone, they're never in your end. And, I mean, the new stat for Carolina, which is amazing, is they haven't been scored on the playoffs on a power play. So couple that with, that's where Ovi gets his meal ticket. It's looking decent.
Mm-hmm. So the Carolina Hurricanes, I mean, we're talking about the Toronto Maple Leafs in the first hour. This is the first time they've led in the second round of a playoff series 2-0 since 1987. The Canes do this every year. Does it feel like not a big deal for this team to be where they're at?
I think that they have enough experience and a different makeup. Like, you talked about Carrier, you talked about some of the guys that are playing for this team that have come in and added pieces that they sorely lack. They always have a big back end, but up front, like, if you think about some of the storylines of this series alone, Svechnikov has to exercise some demons. The last time they played in the series, he got knocked out and was face down because he challenged his hero to a fight. Didn't bode well for him. And I would tell you that that's a deflating moment in that series for the entirety of the group. So Svech now, Ovi's got his scoring record, and he now has the opportunity to change the storyline for the Carolina Hurricanes in their favor. Overall, Orlov was formerly in Wash, and now he's in Carolina. He knows his team extremely well. I feel like this is an old Southeast Division battle. Seen each other so much, you can close your eyes and imagine exactly what each team is going to do next. So Carolina right now, I think, is comfortable in the idea that they're going to push the pace so it looks like Washington's playing with the running shoes on and Carolina has the skates on.
Svechnikov can be an X factor here. Like, I watch this guy, Wardo, and I'm like, you should be not Rantanen, but maybe a very lower, you know, poor man's version of a Rantanen. Yeah. He can do things others can't do physically, with speed and with some hands here. So what's keeping him ultimately from going to the next level?
I think the style, but if you're happy with the style and you look at team success, then you'll fit this locker room. Mm-hmm. I think you have to place yourself in an area where you're putting your ego aside and realizing that eventually your ego will get fed when your team success occurs. And that's the problem with playing the Roddy style and why Rantanen's in Dallas. Rantanen doesn't want to go bang in the corners to win it. He wants to transition across, use his body, cut to the net, make a creative play and score a goal. He's willing to battle it out in that front, but to play that style for 60 minutes and be expected to, if you're not the two guys below the goal line, you got to be reloading high because your defenseman's going to be pinching. Those are things you have to get adjusted to, and it takes time, and it's not always fun playing that style.
Is that what happened to Rantanen? It was just not a style issue here? Because there were some nights I'm watching, and he's playing 17 minutes.
Oh, yeah. Well, here's the other thing is you got to wrap your brain around Carolina is either your town or it's not. You're either in that stage of your life where you're like a low key, you want to kind of go under the radar sometimes, you're still really embraced by the fan base, or you want to be in a Dallas where it's a bigger city and the entertainment's better, the restaurants are different, all these things. It depends on where you are in life and what you want for yourself and your family.
Yeah, it's funny how that shook out. They ended up with Stankoven and was it two firsts? And they're not
Jankowski. I mean, that kid is a Roddy Brind'Amour dream right now. He's playing lower level minutes in a role that sorely needed to be filled in this team, and he fits well with, I mean, whoever you put him with, Carrier, Martinuk, whatever, you can interchange all six pieces on the lower end and feel like you're still going to put up a competitive group on the back end that won't be dominated by someone's 1-2. Mm-hmm. Just they won't. They're highly responsible. For Jankowski right now, he's a battle winner. He's got a little grit to his game, but all of a sudden he emerges and he's scoring goals in a way that he wasn't expecting because that wasn't his role in Dallas.
Yeah.
Is he a game time decision?
I hate to tell you this, but Carolina basically excommunicated me from any information in my past job. I stuck my nose in places where it shouldn't be, and then it basically told me to take a hike. I'm no longer on the – I'm not in the in crowd, you'd call it anymore.
Buddy, is he available? I mean, how big of trouble can I get you in with that question?
They know if I'm calling now, it's not for information. I'm trying to snivel for tickets. I'm retired. I can't afford those ticket prices anymore. I need the alumni discount.
Don't come to Toronto.
Yeah, no kidding.
I heard.
So do you look at this Canes team and kind of think of your own Canes team at all, that maybe none of the or fewer of the top-end elite guys in the league but play a team system, team structure, good defense sort of thing? Can it happen almost 20 years later?
I hate to tell you, I'm going to go back to 2002.
Okay.
So we met Toronto, and there's a juggernaut in Toronto. I mean, let's be honest. You guys were already deciding between was it Colorado or was it Detroit. And we snuck in there, and we just played a consistent style of game that we found would counter what Toronto was able to do. And we just kept it close. And we knew – here's the mentality, which I think is also the same mentality here. Is they're going to try and keep it close so that when it comes down to the trying times, they've already run down the defenseman in the last 10 minutes of the third period. You get to overtime, everybody's exhausted because this team is so well-conditioned. I'd even say by comparison to probably – 90% of other teams around the National Hockey League, because that's what Roddy has made, the identity of this team. They know the later they get into the game, the better off they are. And that was what we did in 2002. We just kept things close and hoped for the best. And this is what that team reminds me of.
Boy, I can't wait for that conference final between Toronto and Carolina where we're going to have them on every day.
It's going to be electric.
I can't wait for a state proclamation in North Carolina that if you're coming into our town in blue and white, you cannot buy a ticket. And the funny part is, so many people stay over from Nortel that live here in Raleigh that they're already here. They have addresses. So here's your key. If you're in Toronto, you want tickets here, find your buddy who came here in like 1995 with Nortel, still has an address, they'll sell you tickets.
Hey, you don't think Toronto can get through Florida for real, do you?
I honestly do at this point.
Oh, yeah.
Listen, game one for me was an anomaly. I feel like Florida had nothing that you could build off of from that game that you would say, hey, listen, going into game two, we did this well. Nothing. So game three, truth, better. They weren't as abysmal, but Toronto looked like they put the boots to them. So now here's the big question. Is the mentality in Florida like, hey, this is the ebb and flow of a series and everybody should carry home ice and trying to get to game seven and just get that last chance to work the odds that you'll win one there, right? So Florida has to hold serve. Let's be honest, I don't think Toronto plays particularly well in Florida. So that's one thing. I also know that there's a storyline yesterday that our boy Maurice and Saint-Laurent don't exactly get along historically, so that Rodriguez call might come creeping up.
Really?
Oh, you don't know about that.
No, I didn't know that was a thing.
There's a storyline there that there wasn't Mo fined significantly for interaction with from Saint-Laurent?
All I know is Mo was asked after the game what he thought of the embellishment call or whatever. He said nothing or, you know.
Nothing. Because historically coaches are cheap and they don't want to pay out money for fines.
Love to get your quick thought on what Edmonton showed everybody going up against Vegas.
That one's, like, puzzling to me. I thought Edmonton was going to be left for dead, that they were lucky to get through this. I felt like Vegas was going to come with something different, and they were pedestrian in how they played. And it's like Edmonton played with them a level of emotion. In spite of whatever you're putting back there in net, they seem to overcome it. And so my constant criticism about Edmonton for the last 3 years is like, got to get a goalie. Same story I say about Carolina. then I look at their decor and like, oh, you know, you get you have so many warts in the back end that come playoff time, they'll be exposed. I don't know how they're doing it, but I mean, you wake the slumbering Draisaitl and McDavid and all the guys that who have had the past experience of getting to game seven, there's like an emotional investment understanding where we talk about the tangibility of having gone to the playoffs and experience. Montreal needed to learn it, and Edmonton got it last year, and they know that they're never quite out. So how they came back in this game is a testimony to having been on that journey, and you're never out of the playoffs. A la what happened with Winnipeg and St. Louis, Edmonton is another team that they're never going to just give up and lay down at any stage of the playoffs. They've been there, they understand it, and they've done that.
Buddy, great stuff, man. Enjoy the game. And we're going to catch up to you real soon, okay?
Good luck getting in.
Thanks, Wardo.
Hey, just to be legit, I actually went out and bought a mic for your show.
Buddy, you look and sound amazing.
I work for an IT company. I'm going to have someone come teach me how to set it up.
I want to talk about the camera you have. Autofocus, it's zooming. Yeah, Do you have a person who works in your house? What is happening?
No, hey, Apple, shout out to Apple if they want to sponsor me. I have an M2, and it's a pretty advanced system.
No.
I can make, like, if I do this, I think bubbles come across FaceTime, and balloons pop up, all kinds of stuff. I can make it confetti.
What a world. What a world.
Man, you're just...
2025.
You're going to have to start hanging jerseys like us. hey, start begging for jerseys. It's worked for us a little bit on our show.
I love it.
Okay, Wardo, thanks again, pal.
I can afford free. Hey, listen, I can afford free if anybody can afford free.
Stanley Cup champion, Aaron Ward.
Thanks, Wardo.
Thanks, guys.
All right.
I went back and I did some digging on Maurice versus St. Laurent.
Okay.
And he put him, he buried him.
So hold on, I just want to say, the comment he actually said there asked, did the ref talk to you to explain the embellishment call? And he said, no, he didn't.
This is from January 19th. 2023 on scoutingtherefs.com, which is a good ref website.
Good resource.
Yeah. He said, I'll just read the quote here. I'm proud of our guys here tonight. They flew us out to the West Coast, flew us back, flew us home, flew us up here and back to back. And they threw those two guys at us. We hung in there pretty good. I'm proud of this group. and he said, yeah, basically there'll be penalties you like. And, It wasn't Florida Panther friendly. He went on and won. He buried him.
Yeah.
It was like vintage mad Paul Maurice going after the refs. So there you go. Maybe there's something. Listen, it's got to be impossible to not have personal vendettas as a referee. Yeah, I don't know how you do it.
Every coach at some point presumably has told you to stuff it.
Speaking of that, when they brought out Wes McCauley to be a linesman last night, I almost fainted. It's like, we're really bringing him into this.
He takes the mic over. Offside. Red team.
2 minutes for offside. Hey,
before we leave, Joel Quenneville hired as head coach of Anaheim. Mm. It's been almost, what, 3.5 years?
Long time.
Long time here. Thoughts?
You know, the league made him eligible, right? I don't know how long ago they said he was eligible to be rehired to be a coach in the NHL. Once the league says, okay, you know, we can quibble with a lot of different people in the league. Some people don't love that, you know, Bowman's a GM. Some people don't love that, you know, Ovi or other Russian players who support Putin can play. It's a lot of league with a lot of people. They found an owner willing to do it.
Well, when you look at a coach like tonight in Carberry, everybody's looking for the next Carberry. Mm-hmm. And there's others out there that have tried. That have failed miserably.
Sure.
For Anaheim to go to Joel Quenneville here and not, you know, I think it speaks more volume, more on some of these newer type of coaches that are coming in and not having very great success. Mm-hmm. I think just speaks volumes to having to go back to a guy like Joel who has won before and can judge character and do all of that. And you know, some of these newer coaches, and some are good, but there's a lot of guys that are too busy trying to reinvent coaching. It's kind of like,
it's a long time off though, Kip.
And then they come in, they get their chance, and they fail miserably.
Long time off.
I think that's why you go to Joel Quenneville right now.
Yeah,
I don't know, long time. to be out of a job and then come back. Things change. We'll see.
We'll see. All right. Just like that, 2 hours, fastest 2 hours in hockey, and we've solved nothing. But we're back tomorrow with Doug McLean on Off the Rails Friday.
You excited about the OHL championships tonight?
Thanks to Aaron Ward. Have a great night, everybody.